Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Joining us now on a Thursday at 1 o'clock, as he does every week, is Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet. Elliot, I want to get into your conversation with UC Soros this past week, but a little bit of breaking news that the St. Louis Blues have traded Vladimir Tarasenko to the Rangers. Do you have any information about the details of that trade, the return for St. Louis, anything along the lines of that trade?
Yeah, I'm looking into it right now, Carolyn. I think Sammy Blais is going in the trade. I've heard rumblings of Kravtsov, but I haven't confirmed that yet. I think the Blues are eating some of Tarasenko's salary, so there's like a few moving pieces here, but it sounds like it's Blais for sure, maybe Kravtsov, and I'm just trying to get a handle on all the draft picks and salary movements that are part of it.
Elliot Friedman is with us. So do you think, I mean, this is not an unexpected move. Vladimir Tarasenko has wanted a trade away from St. Louis. Do you think that this might be one move that's indicative of a larger movement for the St. Louis Blues, maybe trading away some of that 2019 core?
Yeah, I think that's happening. I think that's definitely going on there. The Blues have recognized that it's time. You know, they're behind you in the standings. Their math isn't very good. And, you know, the thing about Tarasenko is the relationship between him and the organization has been falling down for the last couple of years. You know, he asked for a trade before last season. It never happened. I think they explored a trade in the summer. Obviously, it didn't happen, but finally it happened, and he had to approve it. So we're still waiting for the trade call to get done. We'll see what happens here, but Tarasenko is getting traded to the Rangers pending like all the official paperwork getting done here, because he has to officially get his no-trade waived. I think also, like, we'll see what happens. There's O'Reilly. There's a few other guys. You know, we'll see what they do here. But, yes, a long way of answering your question, Carolyn, that I do think the dismantling of the 2019 Rangers, our Blues, has begun.
So, Elliot, a great interview with UC Soros, and congratulations to you and Jeff Merrick, because UC's one of those guys, a little bit like Shea Weber, very happy to talk about teammates, not really excited to talk about himself very much, but I guess it was the atmosphere, the waves, the beach, you know, the vibe. And that is probably one of the best things about the All-Star break, isn't it? That players are a little bit of in a different place in mind, and they're willing to have really good conversations like that.
Yes. You know, he joked about my old beard too. So I knew when he got there that he was in a good mood. I don't know Soros that well. I mean, obviously, I know him as a player. I don't know much about him as a person. You know, the thing I liked about him is he was, you know, he's pretty quiet, but he obviously believes in himself. Like, you know, basically telling the story about how one team asked him, you know, can we do some work on you? Some, I can't remember what he said, X-ray, MRI, whatever it was.
Yeah, really compelling. He said that you know, you hear sometimes parents doing this with their kids when, I don't know, 10 or 11 years old. They measure your bones somehow, and they can say if they're going to be growing a lot more, like how tall are you going to be? And I guess that was the issue there.
Yes, and I tried to get him to tell me the team, but he wouldn't do it. Like, you know, I made my best efforts, but I failed. You know, he's a hell of a goalie. There's no question about it. And I think all of us in life, we root for people who are kind of, you know, outside the norm, right? And right now the norm for a goalie is to be an absolute behemoth. And here's Soros, one of the best goalies in the NHL, and he's not a behemoth.
And we want to thank you, too, for shouting us out, you know, how we had these conversations about him as a Vezina goaltender. You know, I was hoping, I'll have to talk to Juice and say, you know, hey, that's us. You're talking about us. You know, we got your back, right? But that was interesting.
Yes,
how he's viewed nationally is a big thing. But, you know, how much Nashville relies on him to sort of lead them through.
I think that I think that he understands that. Like, you know, I think guys find situations where they're happy and they recognize what's good for them. And this is, I got the feeling that I got the feeling that he really likes it there. And, you know, I think that's the thing. Like, one of the best lessons I ever got early in my career is that don't bleep with happy. Like, you'll meet a lot of people in this business. They'll go somewhere for an extra couple $1,000s and they're miserable. Like, sometimes you're going to get blown out of the water. You're going to get an offer that says, I can't turn that down. It's life-changing money. But in our business, I've seen a lot of people that from an extra couple here and there, they'll leave and they'll be like, boy, I was happy in that situation. And I think he's one of those guys. Like, obviously, the Predators gave him a huge offer. He took it. Could he have gotten more? Maybe. But he's happy. And it's very clear he's happy there. And don't screw with that unless you absolutely have to.
The other thing that I found compelling, and I think a lot of people here will feel this way when they listen to it, if they haven't already, because we've had a lot of talk about high ankle sprains, because Ryan Tannehill, the Titans quarterback, had a high ankle sprain, and how that's a little bit different than, you know, maybe just rolling your ankle. And he talked in pretty good detail how it affected, how he tried to come back for the playoff series, but there was just no way he could possibly do it, and how it affected his off-season training. So I thought that was it. You don't hear players talk about injuries very much.
No, you don't. And actually, I find that a lot of them do once it's over. Like, you know, like, as long as it's not still, like, kind of affecting them, they will. You know, the one thing I really regret not asking him about is just how he felt after that big 65 save game against Carolina. That was the one thing after I walked away from the interview was, why didn't I ask him about that? Because just like what you're like after a game like that, what your teammates say to you, what your coaches say to you. Like, I always go through these interviews and it's done. And I'm like, you idiot. Why didn't you ask him this question? And now I am sitting here saying, I wish I would have asked that question.
It's funny, like, after the game when we talked to him, it was the traditional, hey, my team got the job done, we scored goals, when it was obvious that he carried them to that victory. You know, he was so humble, he doesn't take the credit that he probably deserves with that in a lot of ways. The other thing, too, Elliot, that I thought jumped out was he was aware of the advanced statistics, how goaltenders are now viewed, as opposed to for years and years, it was just, okay, let's take a look at goals against, let's take a look at save percentage, wins, and that's who your Vezina people are. Now there's so many things that tracked, and I wondered how goalies view those sometimes, but it does look like he's aware of the, you know, goal save above expectation. That's where he always scores very well, and you can see how much his team relies on him.
Mm-hmm. I think Yossi's your best player, I think, but Saros is your most important player, and I think everybody kind of knows that. I think he's an absolutely critical player. You don't get him every game. Goalies can't play 75 games like they used to, but you know, if you don't have a guy who gives you a chance to win like he does, you're not going to win. And he gives you a chance to win in a lot of games.
So, Elliot, I notice here you are putting out there that it's not just Tarasenko to the Rangers. They're going to throw in the big, lanky defenseman Nico Mikkola in there as well?
Yeah, it looks like that. And I think Blay is going back. I believe there's a Blay is going back, draft picks and a prospect.
Now, Elliot, quickly before we get you out of here, we saw what the Predators did the other night versus Vegas, and Vegas was before the break. Vegas was on a three-game losing streak, three-four game losing streak. The Preds was on a three-game winning streak. You know, Vegas is without their captain, but the way they played, more importantly, the way the Predators played, why does something like that happen, especially off a break that was, you know, honestly much needed for just about everybody?
Mm-hmm. I just think that it's just a matter of when you can make the deal. And when you can pull the trigger. And I think that's kind of where we are in this situation. Like, honestly, Derek, it comes down to when the cap matches up, when you can make the deal, and, you know, when you decide it's our turn to pull the trigger. And I think the Rangers feel they're really good, and they wanted a score, and that's the guy they targeted. I think they were looking at Patrick Kane, too. I'm just not sure that that's all going to work.
Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet, we appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, sorry about all the craziness, guys.
No worries.
We knew when you came, we're like, he's gonna be digging into this one. This is a big trade right here.
No, it's a busy one, so appreciate you for joining us in all this craziness. That was Elliot Friedman, Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, and hey, I want to give something away. So if you are a Preds fan and you want to win tickets in our Lower Bowl Section 102, just text the keyword Superbook all in one word to the game text line 615-737-1025 and you will be entered to win. Win with 1025-1063 the game and you can win with Superbook. It's 1025-1063 the game. Hey, later today, tune in for Stillman & Company live from Radio Row in Phoenix, brought to you by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue in the Richland Creeks Shopping Center. Pay no money down and no interest for 1 year right now during their tax refund sale. So at Radio Row with the media at the Super Bowl, Roger Goodell is going through, you know, all of his due diligence, checking all of his boxes. And he sat down with the media yesterday and addressed a lot of issues or maybe some concerns and some priorities within the NFL at this point, talking about some of their diversity initiatives, getting more minority head coaches into the NFL, trying to bring in more young black people, more young women, more minorities into the NFL, talked about concussions, how concussions have been up. What did they say? 18% this year concussions were up.
Yeah.
Injuries overall in the NFL. So just some things, some grumblings and some initiatives and some focuses in the NFL. And then Roger Goodell was talking about something that we have talked about on this program several times. I know so many NFL fans have talked about on Twitter, on social media, especially after the AFC Championship game. He was talking about some of the officiating in the NFL, which has absolutely been a hot-button topic throughout the entire season, and especially after the AFC Championship game. You know, the Chiefs getting an extra third down, and so, you know, the Josh Allen incomplete pass versus the Josh Dobbs fumble. So many inconsistencies within refereeing in the NFL. And Roger Goodell addressed it yesterday. This was Roger Goodell.
Yes, we listen to all the voices. Let's just start with that point. But we like to go to the facts, ultimately. So just to take your point, are we losing people from the field to the booth? There are some that never even officiated on the NFL field. And so we didn't lose anyone. May have lost them from our office, but we didn't lose them from officiating on the field. Others are taking on that responsibility at the end of their careers. So I do not think that's a factor at all, zero. I think for us, when you look at officiating, I don't think it's ever been better in the league. There are over 42,000 plays in a season. Multiple infractions could occur on any play. Take that out and extrapolate that. That's hundreds, if not millions, of potential fouls. And our officials do an extraordinary job of getting those. Are there mistakes in the context of that? Yes. They are not perfect, and officiating never will. But we've also had, obviously, replay and other aspects that help us address those issues to make sure they're not something that we can't correct on the field. Communications between our office, that is not the case. In the championship game, that was stopped appropriately because the clock was running by an official on the field. That happens frequently in our game. That's not an unusual thing to have that happen. So, again, we want to go back and look at the facts. We may not disagree. We may not agree with every TV announcer or every officiating expert, but we think our officials are doing a great job. But we're always going to look through our competition committee and everything else we have, how we improve our officiating. but it will never be perfect.
There you go. That was Roger Goodell sounding like an alien there at the
Super
Bowl.
Yeah, they had a little echo, little thing going on with the mic there.
He needs some water.
I'll give you a general take. I agree with him on the broad question of is officiating better than it's ever been. I think it is. I honestly do.
Why?
Here's what I'll tell you. Go back and watch some old games.
Yeah.
And you will see that it is better. And the replay system overall helps officiating. It helps avoid the horrible missed calls, the nightmare that an official will go back and say, I don't know how I missed that, but there was no way to make up for it. Just that alone makes officiating better, I think. It is never going to be perfect. And I guarantee you, we'll sit here next year and go, what's going on with the officiating? Is it the worst it's ever been? You know, you always feel that way. But go watch old games. I promise you, you will notice that it was worse before, I think. And the players get bigger. They get stronger. They get faster. It gets harder to officiate every year. That's part of where I'm coming from with that.
You're only going to get outrage when you know, it seems to be sort of an egregious call or something you may not have seen lately. Or if it's in, you know, say the playoffs, then, you know, everything is magnified.
And it should be magnified.
And it rightfully so. You know, go back to the Cincinnati game. Well, that extra down, well, technically, that was the right thing to do. That was 100% the right thing to do. Because had they got a touchdown, you know what Cincinnati would have been screaming? The clock wasn't running. The clock wasn't running. They should have stopped it. They should have. And you know what Cincinnati fans would have screamed if they knew the rule? The clock. He should have came in there and stopped the clock. But they didn't. They stopped the clock. The play had already been ran, but he was running from the back trying to stop the clock. He wasn't able to do it. The play had presented itself. He came back in as a ref and said, listen, that play shouldn't have never even went. I was trying to stop it, couldn't stop it. Now they're all, you know, conversating, and the longer it goes, the longer the conversation goes, that's when the conspiracy theories start coming, you know. But I am in agreement with Roger Goodell from the standpoint of where the league was, where it even 10 years ago, where it was from an official from officiating standpoint to where it is now, it's much better. Are you going to get some calls that you just don't agree with? Absolutely. You can call holding on every single play if you want to. You can call pass interference just about every third or fourth pass that is thrown in the direction of a receiver, tight end, or running back. You can call it. A lot of times they don't. You hear the announcers, well, they're just letting them play. But then if it's a catch and it's physical, who's complaining? The DB's complaining. Mm-hmm. If it's physical and it's not a catch, who's complaining? The receiver and the team is complaining. Well, he's holding me. Well, two plays ago, the same thing was happening, and you were pushing and you made the catch. So what's so different now? You know, I think people need to look at all of that when it comes to officiating in the National Football League or any professional sport, that it's not going to be perfect. What you don't want to see is blatant missed calls. Like, everybody in the world sees that, whether that was a holding, that was a roughing the passer, or whatnot. If it's blatant and it's not called, then that's where you get the uproar. Just like, you know, roughing the passer. I think they're so conditioned now that if it looks like roughing the passer, they're going to throw the flag.
Yeah, and that's
and
where
that's just that's
to me,
because
that's
of where the league has gone.
Yeah, and I
so
think that's
many
where
blatantly
the
blatantly bad roughing the passer.
So that's one specific area. That's why I'm saying in general. I think when you're trying to strive for perfection, you're always trying to keep up with the speed of the game, the way the evolution goes, and now you have technology to help you with that. I think that's where the game that's where you can improve. I think the overall officiating is better than it ever has before. I agree with Roger Goodell there, but I do think to look at what replay does sometimes with roughing the passer, with the catch, not a catch, with the delay of game play clock hits zero. To me, those are those little areas where I think you can still strive to get better. And in particular, the roughing the passer, I think, has to be addressed. It's gone too far. Mm-hmm. It's gone too far.
It's
ridiculous. A vast majority of, I think, football people, fans, every level of football agree that I know we're trying to protect the quarterbacks, and you should, but it's gone too far.
Mm-hmm. Some of the roughing the passer calls are ridiculous. And to the point of replay has made officiating better than it ever has in the league. Like, I'm sure there were so many, horrible calls, like, in the 80s when you don't have a pylon cam and you don't have a cam and you don't have all these different cameras. Mm-hmm. I get that. I totally understand that. But I think it's also the idea of you telling me you have all these cameras and you have all of these eyes on every single inch of the field and you're still making roughing the passer calls like that and you're still missing or calling dumb PIs like that that are totally affecting the outcome of a game. I mean, look at the Saints-Rams NFC Championship in 2019. That, I think, was the most blatantly horrendous call that I have ever seen in an NFL game. A single blown call that completely changed the outcome of the game and affected the Super Bowl. I mean, like, calls like that, when you have every resource at your disposal, whether that's the booth or the cameras or replay or whatever it might be, and I feel like that's a little tone deaf from Roger Goodell to say that it's better than it has ever been. Well, when there's been so much uproar over dumb missed calls or dumb calls, period.
Well, yeah, but see, the problem with pass interference, you don't want to go down that road of, oh, let's review it, because I think the NFL tried that.
They did it for a year,
and it didn't.
And
it was like, nah, let's not do that, because it's going to cause the game to slow up even more. Two, how many of these refs are going to realistically, go back and make a change on a PI, whether it be offense or defense, unless it's just like you said, unless it's just blatant. But again, This game is moving so fast. Like, I have people that have seen the game on television, never played it, but seen a game on television, but then they've gotten the ability to get down on the field, and that experience is like no other. Watching a game from a field vantage and how fast it is. It is totally different. So just imagine if a fan thinks once they get on the field and they see this, it's like, wow, how are they even seeing half of this stuff? That's how it is for a ref, but he has to make sure that what he's seeing is right, because these things are, a lot of these plays are bang, bang. Now, when they review it, it's obvious that you can see, well, yeah, he hit him a little bit too early. But in the moment, they're moving that fast. I would challenge anybody to try to be a ref in a high school game.
Yeah.
Or in a college game.
Or in a flag football charity tournament, which is what I did.
What I'm saying is how it's their job, yes, but just like us, our job is to, give information on the radio, give our opinions. And we may mess up a lot of times. But when you're on the radio for so long, we know if things happen, you mess up with certain things. That's how the refs are. This game is moving so fast that, listen, we may make a call or we might miss a call, that everybody else after replay, they see, oh, it was. And I'm looking on the jumbotron as a ref, and I'm like, yeah, that was. Now that we look back on it. But you don't have that advantage in real time. You can't slow it up as it's happening and say, yeah, that's a pass interference. Should they have called that same one? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They should have called it. But I got to put myself in that person's that person's shoes and say, well, what I made that call, because that was moving damn fast, So I like to look at both sides of an issue. But like you said, there are some egregious calls that wasn't made that should have been made. And, you go from there.
It's a tough job. It's a thankless job. And we can get into this. Let's continue the conversation on the other side. And, of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. And I'll ask the question to the callers, the texters, the listeners. Do you view the NFL any differently this season or after Roger Goodell made those comments because of the officiating? It's Caroline Willie D-Mace, 1025, 1063 The Game.
So, I get it. I see what Roger's saying. I see what his point is, but you just can't have – we're literally one really bad Super Bowl play away, like affecting the Super Bowl from people completely losing their minds, and it's about having that quality in the biggest possible games.
There you go. That was Charles Robinson on Robbie and Rex Road this morning. Of course, Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports. He is in Phoenix this week, and he's saying, hey, you know, if there's a blatantly bad call in the Super Bowl when all eyes are going to be on that screen, you are going to hear a lot of uproar. Rightfully so, because it's the biggest game of the year. It's the biggest game in sports. But also, these are some bad calls that have just been building upon one another all throughout the season, year over year. But, Willie, you had a point before we went to the break.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what it was. So we were talking about the officiating.
Speed of the game, officiating, and, you know, they're not always going to get it right.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. Like, what's a better officiated game? Okay, here are the two choices. You don't think about the officiating at all during the course of the game, and then one awful call, like the pass interference one that you referenced, the Saints-Rams game a couple years ago. Is that a better officiated game than one that has inconsistent standards for roughing the passer, for holding, for pass interference throughout the game? Like, what's a better officiated game? Like, so I would argue that you could have a very well officiated game where one call on one play screws it up and has you going crazy for years, right? That we'll never forget that play.
No.
But I would argue that's a better officiated game than and something that is going to happen again, whether it happens in the Super Bowl, there's going to be one missed call somewhere on some football field, rather than inconsistency throughout the game. You don't know what's pass interference, how much hand fighting are we getting away with. On one play, it's this way. On the next play, it's that play. That's bad officiating to me. And so that's where I think that's where Roger Goodell is coming from, where I think that they've made some strides in those areas. And it's never going to be perfect.
It won't be perfect. And I'm not naive to think that every single holding call, every single itty-bitty minute little call is going to be called in a game. I totally understand that. These are humans, after all. Not every single game is going to be perfect. Not every call is going to be perfect. But I think I'm looking at it as you want to see consistency as much as possible. And the idea is that officiating does not affect the outcome of a game. That they call the right calls, and if you mess up and you step out of bounds or, you know, you have a false start, that's on you. That's not on the officiants. So I would probably agree with you that what's a better officiated game is a good game with one bad call versus inconsistencies, because that's really the big thing with me is inconsistencies week over week, game over game, crew over crew. But they're both bad because both of the outcomes would be affected by the officiating, when the idea of it should be the players affect the outcome. You know, the play calls affect the outcome. The coaching affects the outcome, rather than either one blown call or one incredibly inconsistent roughing the passer call here and there.
I can see that. You know, if you walked into a courtroom and gave your spiel, I can see the jury like, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
They're nodding their heads.
Yeah, you're right, Caroline.
Should have gone to law school.
You're right, really. I mean, but no. Here's the alternative to both, that they don't call anything, that they just let the game
call play. Your own foul.
No.
Ball don't lie.
Derek, you held me on that play. I'm assessing you 10 yards.
Because it's, you know, people, like you said, Willie, it's, okay, what if you have a game where, you know, there's penalties going on, or there may be some missed calls. They're not egregious, but there's some missed calls. Or it's that one, the game seemed to be going the way it's going. They're making their calls or whatnot. No one's complaining. And all of a sudden, boom, here's that one play that has everybody, you know, in the frenzy.
Yep.
In the
uproar. And everything's on the line.
Exactly. So what if you just have it, the ref's like, listen, just go out there and play, you know. Y'all play, y'all do it, and then, but people will be complaining then.
Of course.
There's no penalties called. Well, that's how it used to be in the NFL. Like,
right, there used to be no replay system.
It was like, we're just going to let y'all play.
Yeah.
Unless it was like egregious, like,
but it's
hold
a different
it.
Time. There's so much more money in it.
I understand that.
Okay, so here is where the question lies, is are there some things, like, we don't want every play reviewed, right? But they tried to review pass interference to correct the thing that screwed up in the Rams Saints game, the interference. Ugh. That didn't go well. Now I would say that if they had stayed with it, like in the NHL stayed with goaltender interference, that was a big cause of confusion the first couple years they put that in there, that you could challenge a goal for goaltender interference. But here we are, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years later, and it's way, way better. Like the other night, there was one in the Predators game. Now, you know, they lost the game 5-1, but there were a lot of people that were wondering, should they have challenged the goal they made at 4-1? But everybody's understanding of the rule, there was a day and time that they absolutely would have challenged that. But now there's a better understanding of how you look at that, and that was clearly a goal, even though it ticked off UC Saros. You almost never see UC Saros get mad, but it was his own guy that pushed the player into him. So it was clearly, you know, not something that you review. They weren't going to overturn it. I think if they had stuck with it, and I think if they challenged roughing the passer, eventually replay could help you save yourself some really bad calls. The other thing is this eye in the sky, or the correction you hear sometimes. I don't know what's going on in the headset sometimes, but, you know, there's sometimes where the guy's about to challenge a call, and then he picks up the challenge flag because somebody in New York got to the referee and said, you guys missed that one. Mm-hmm. He was out of bounds. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe we can take that to another level, and that would help, you know, get rid of a few bad calls. It's never going to be perfect, but these small increments of improvement. Think about TV games in the early 70s. We barely had one replay. Like, if you got one replay, like, watch the Super Bowl. You go on YouTube and watch the Super Bowl from 1970-something.
No, they ain't showing replays.
You're barely seeing it. Yeah. They're like, hey, we got something that's new. It's called a replay. Like, it was just showing a replay on TV was new,
and
right?
It's better, like, officiating is better than when they wore leather helmets, for sure, yes, because, you know, you have so many resources at your disposal, but I think that you can see it both ways, too.
Yeah,
and if you have all those resources, better call that PI now.
But the NFL doesn't want it to become, I think they still want, and I think, honestly, truly, fans still want that human element. They don't want to have to go to replay for every
thing. It's boring.
Yeah, it slows up the game. People are going to start, you know, detaching themselves from it and not watching it as much because what would they, man, this game is too long. I'm not watching this whole game. They're calling a penalty, replaying every penalty that they call. I think people truly like the human element of, you know, going out there, and maybe they get it wrong, maybe they get it right, maybe they miss it, maybe they don't. It's the what we are, again, I go back to the book. It's like, if it happens, why are you interjecting yourself in it? Because it's going to happen anyway. Why are you messing with yourself that bad, getting your blood pressure all high and everything else? Calm down. It's not affecting you unless you made a bet, then it might be. But other than that, if you were just looking at it from a strictly fan standpoint, it's, listen, they're going to make some calls that you're going to agree with. They're going to make some calls that you don't agree with. You just don't want to get to a point where you're going into a game and you're already like fist ball before they even kick the ball off because you're anticipating a horrible call. People are anticipating horrible calls in the Super Bowl. That's what they're waiting on.
Oh, boy.
Instead of just like watching a game.
Well, and I don't
walk
know what...
in and unclutch your fist and just enjoy the game instead of going in wanting to fight.
Yeah.
You know?
Another thing is, like, it depends on the crew, right? The I don't know what officiating crew is doing the Super Bowl. I'm sure it's one that's graded out really well. Mm-hmm. But that's another thing that gets discussed is consistency from crew to crew. You know, that you can get the analytics now of how a crew calls holding as opposed to this other crew over here that doesn't call as much holding, right? There's tendencies even of the officials. And so you'd like to see that sort of uniform across the board, or at least something closer to that. That would be another area, I think, to look at for sure. They used to happen with the strike zone in baseball. Then they put that,
you know,
that thing on there, and they now have better ways to make it more consistent. Still not like the umps. They still miss it every now and then. But, again, watch a game from the 80s or the 90s before they had that thing on there. They were missing way more balls and strikes back then than they do now. It's way better than it was, and it's much more uniform from crew to crew.
If you want to win a pair of tickets to the Nashville Predators, take on the Pittsburgh Penguins at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, February 28th. Answer Willie's trivia question correctly. Call him with the correct answer.
I haven't even texted Nick the answer, but I'm sure he knows the answer to this question. Stanley Cup Final 2017, Game 6. Scoreless game. Nashville needs to win Game 6 to force a Game 7. They score a goal, but it's waved off for an early whistle. Who scored? Who looked like he scored a goal that was waved off that would have put Nashville in front 1-0? And woulda, coulda, shoulda. What would have happened if that goal had counted? Which it should have. Who scored it? 615-737-1025. The Predator that scored the goal that was waved off for the whistle being blown early. If you want the prize, you call in. Don't text the line. You can.
You're not going to win. To be the first person to answer that trivia question correctly, you're going to see the Predators take on the Pittsburgh Penguins at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, February 28th. Coming up next, I have an internal dilemma, and I'm hoping Willie and D-Mace can help me out with it. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-106.3 The Game and The Game Nashville app. So the NFL honors are tonight. It will announce NFL MVP, Offensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, all that good stuff. But I'm having a dilemma when it comes to MVP, because I think a lot of times how you can interpret MVP, whatever that means, most valuable player, however you'd like. I interpret it as you are the most valuable player to your team. You take that player away and that team is completely different. I think a lot of times it gets interpreted as the best player on the best team, or maybe the quarterback on the best team. The reason why Aaron Rodgers has won it twice, or back-to-back, in recent years was because he was the best player. He was the quarterback on the best team in the regular season. So finalists for the MVP, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Justin Jefferson, and Patrick Mahomes. I'm having a serious, serious mental dilemma. I don't know who's more valuable to their football team, Joe Burrow or Patrick Mahomes.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Like if you take away Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow from the Bengals and the Chiefs, they are two completely different football teams. And I look at it like the Bengals were absolutely nothing. They hadn't won a playoff game in 40 years until Joe Burrow got there. So you would say you take Joe Burrow away and the Bengals are, you know, right back into mediocrity. And then you look at the Chiefs. They trade away their top receiver, one of the best receivers in the league, and Patrick Mahomes still carries them to the Super Bowl. So Patrick Mahomes, you could argue, is more important than any piece around him. So I'm having a seriously hard time trying to decide who is my MVP.
Yeah. So do we agree that it's a two-horse race between those two?
That fair question.
I think it's a three-horse race.
So who's your third guy?
I think it's Jalen Hurts. You got to put him in there
because
that team is
especially
different
based
without
on
him.
Expectation.
Yeah.
Based on expectation, if you throw that in there, he probably has raised his team way more than expected because we knew Mahomes and Burrow were going to carry their teams. That's kind of like in baseball, like Mike Trout or hockey, Connor McDavid. They're the best guys. Or like Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
You could give Michael Jordan the MVP every year.
Yeah.
When he was playing.
You get LeBron the MVP
but
every year.
There was a year that Karl Malone won the MVP because he had that special year, and everybody sort of made fun of Malone, like, oh, who's the real MVP? Like that irked Jordan. Remember, that was big, talked about in the big documentary they did in The Last Dance. Like, he's the MVP? Are you serious? Like, he used that to motivate himself. So I do think that that's a good argument for Hurts.
Yeah. And plus, I don't think he will – I think his chances of winning it are slim because he did miss, two or three games toward the end of the season. They end up losing two of those games. They end up losing.
Minshew Mania.
Yeah, they end up losing two of those games with Minshew. So his presence on the field is valuable to the Philadelphia Eagles. But you look at Joe Burrow and you say, well.
Jalen Hurts actually has the best odds.
Yeah,
well, if
you look at Joe Burrow, you're like, man, you take Joe Burrow off that team, and man, what are they? But we haven't seen that because, at least this year, we hadn't seen him because he's been healthy. Patrick Mahomes, same thing. You take Patrick off that team, obviously that's a different team. Well, when he did miss a few plays, they scored a touchdown. Not to say that would have continued to happen because Patrick Mahomes ended up coming back in the game, but that offense still continued to move down the field.
Cooking.
Exactly. So Patrick Mahomes could win it just about every year. Joe Burrow, if he continues to play the way he has been playing, and I have no reason to believe he won't, he can win it every year. Josh Allen is out of it, I think. He just he hasn't done what it takes to win an MVP.
He couldn't step up when
exactly,
he needed to.
Absolutely. So to me, it's a three-horse race. And if I had to pick, it would either be Hurts or Burrow.
No Mahomes.
Nah, I mean, not to say Mahomes great, but I think this season, I think it would be Burrow or Hurts. I would pick one of the two.
Man.
I have to take Patrick Mahomes. I have to. That's going to do it for us.
I can't believe you didn't take Burrow.
Exactly. Wow.
Putting your roots aside.
I am impartial. As I just took my LSU sweatshirt off. Right? That's going to do it for us today. Stillman and Company is coming up next. Jared is live from Radio Row at the Super Bowl. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m.
Peace.